attack upon his brother, while simultaneously creating an illusion of Bolas disintegrating before the eyes of all Ravnica. Fearing that Liliana might see through the facade, he made his best attempt to mimic Bolas's psychic voice and shouted the dragon's death cry into her mind. In doing so, he touched her mind and realized just how desperate and broken Gideon's sacrifice had left her, even in her victory over the dragon. Jace tried to reach out to her as himself, but she begged him to desist. By this time, the invisible Ugin had rendered the invisible and weakened Bolas unconscious. The spirit dragon was ready, so Jace had reached out telepathically to Saheeli Rai, instructing her to shut down the immortal sun. She did not question the order. Physically, mentally, and morally exhausted, Jace had sat himself down on the broken ground of the plaza next to a crying Chandra and Nyssa, as first the two dragons, and then Liliana, had planes walked away. Now Jace walked beside Chandra and Nyssa as they bore the armor of Gideon Jura, mourning the man who had sacrificed everything to bring Bolas down. And every step Jace Beleren took felt like a lie. Coda 69. Two Dragons. The spirit dragon and his dragon brother stared at each other in silence. The latter had been brought low. Despite being wrapped in his twin brother's wings, the journey from Ravnica across the blind eternities had literally blinded the sparkless dragon, had scorched the scales off his hide. It had taken weeks for him to regain consciousness, months for him to heal. Even now, his vision was still blurry and myopic. Slumped upon the ground, he looked, yes, vanquished. He felt like something was missing, too. His spark, of course, but something else as well. Glaring at his opponent, he pushed that concern aside.
"I thought I killed you,"
he grumbled. The spirit dragon shrugged.
"Times change, especially on the plain of Tarkir, where I died. You should get used to the idea."
"You should get used to the idea that I'm simply going to kill you again in a few minutes."
"Once you catch your breath?"
"Exactly."
"I don't think so, brother. Look at yourself, weighed down by mortality. You don't have the power to kill me in a few minutes or a few millennia. And you no longer have the lifespan to hold out beyond that. You no longer have your spark."
"Then I'll take yours."
"Not by force, not even by guile. Not in a million lifetimes, especially when the quantity of lifetimes you have left is now limited to exactly one."
"You think you can hold me?
I know who you are, brother. And I'm not ever going to forget it."
"You arrogant fool."
The spirit dragon chuckled.
"I'm an arrogant fool? Really? Look into that pool of becoming."
Reflexively, the mortal dragon did. The spirit dragon said,
"Pot, meet kettle."
His dragon brother burned. He said,
"This is my meditation realm. My place of power."
"Not anymore. You forget it was my realm first. It still likes me better. Prefers me. Take a good look around. You'll see."
The wishing to appear defiant, the mortal dragon, despite himself, raised his eyes to the horizon. The first thing he noticed, even with his blurred vision, was that the entire color scheme of the place had been altered since his last visit. Now it sported a distinctive blue tint, the signature color of his twin. Worse, The great horns on the far horizon curved inward, as his did, but then flared outward like his brother's. The realm was marked, branded as belonging to the spirit dragon. Yet another loss. Somewhat abashed, the mortal dragon shook his head.
This is not possible. This is only the beginning. No. How? I demand to know. You're not in any position to be issuing demands. Still, my plan was perfect.
The spirit dragon sighed. He shook his head slowly from side to side and said,
I know what you're doing, brother. Playing for time, gathering information, looking for a way to turn both to your advantage. But there's no need to strategize or wheedle. It won't help you. You have plenty of time. Not eternity, of course, not anymore. But time enough to learn hopelessness. And as for information, I'll grant you that freely as well. Ask your questions.
Swallowing his anger, as he still refused to believe the spirit dragon's words, and thus was searching for his moment, his opening, his opportunity to reverse his admittedly sagging current fortunes, the mortal dragon said,
How did you get past the wards I placed on this plane? Sarkon Vol helped me achieve this realm. He's actually been quite helpful. You must have really ticked him off.
Ignoring the other's attitude, the mortal dragon asked,
And what role did you play in my...
He almost choked on the word.
Defeat. A very small role, actually. Mostly I observed. How? I know you weren't on Ravnica while I still had my spark. I'd have sensed you. You never realized that the spirit gem you once so proudly floated between your horns was made from a piece of my own essence.
At the word once, the mortal dragon immediately reached above his head and searched for the egg-shaped gem. Unable to find it, he again looked down into the pool. His reflection revealed that it was gone. Gone like his spark. The spirit dragon ignored both his mortal brother's panic and his despair.
Come now, brother, think. Use that mythic brain of yours to reason this out. You found the gem here, did you not? Admired it so much, you never once thought about its provenance. But again, this was my realm first, and the spirit gem quite literally came from me. You used it without ever realizing you had never mastered it. Once I had returned here, I was able to use my connection to the gem to witness every one of your missteps. I made no missteps, the mortal dragon sputtered.
In his outrage, he straightened to his full height, inadvertently pulling a muscle in his left wing shoulder. He automatically summoned a healing spell to correct this minor annoyance. No magic came. The shoulder continued to ache, but his lack of power was the greater injury. He struggled to suppress a tantrum.
All right, fine. What missteps? Well, to begin with, you had so much contempt for Niv-Mizzet because the Firemind was neither an Elder Dragon nor a Planeswalker that you didn't track his spirit after killing him. Relative to you, he seemed insignificant. But Niv was still a powerful ancient dragon who had done his own share of preparations.
The spirit dragon pointed down at a little silver box open and lying on its side. All its delicate filigree, clockwork gears, and crystals were charred and useless now. but they had served their purpose.
Niv's ghost was stored in that, and Vol brought it here to me, where I could help preserve it until his resurrection. Second, you may have protected yourself from Blackblade, but it never even occurred to you to protect yourself from Hazaret's spear. Whereas that was a weapon you had forged yourself, using, without giving it a moment's thought, the tiniest bit of your own essence. After all, you had power to spare. Why not reinforce the weapon with your own limitless potency when you were giving it to your proxy and thrall? And so you handed a piece of yourself to Hazaret once you had subdued that god to your will and remade Amonkhet. Of course, the bit of you that existed in the spear is exactly what made you vulnerable to it. So I told Sarkon to find a way to secure it for the Firemind. Then there's your biggest misstep. The way you underestimated the Planeswalkers, their power, their resolve, their capacity for sacrifice, their willingness to do anything to defy you. I know you'd prefer to believe that I'm the one who crossed all your plans, but I never could have managed that alone. The real hero was Lilianna Vess. You thought you knew her, thought you could control her through her weaknesses. But I'd been watching her, and saw her real strength, a desire for redemption that even she could not see or admit to. I knew all she needed was a chance, an opening. Vol, Niv, the spear, and all my planning, they were merely links in a chain that tugged at your attention. They amounted to nothing more or less than a distraction to allow Lilianna Vess and the sacrifice of Gideon Jura to bring you to your knees. Once her work was done, all that remained for me was to bring you here to the meditation realm, or, as I now call it, the prison realm.
Still in denial, the mortal dragon roared,
"No prison can hold the mighty!"
He trailed off, confused. He knew his names, the one he had hatched with, and the one he had given himself. It wasn't that he couldn't say them.
"It's that your names no longer belong to you,"
thought the spirit dragon to his dragon brother.
"Neither of them. You've forfeited any right to your true name and lost the power inherent in your chosen one. You are nameless. Nothing."
"No. Yes."
To make his ultimate point, the spirit dragon straightened to his full height and beyond. He seemed to fill the realm and his brother's consciousness all at once. The mortal dragon winced and found himself cowering.
"Know this, brother. I am your jailer for what remains of your mortality, and will make quite sure you never escape. Your schemes, your machinations, all your little dramas are at an end. The curtain has fallen."
This is Robert Petkoff. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of War of the Spark, Ravnica, by Greg Weissman. This program was directed by Scott Cresswell. Executive producer, Nick Martorelli. Text copyright 2019 by Wizards of the Coast, LLC. Production copyright 2019 Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.